a really important part for a leader is to then not waffle from the plan, right? And being able to set the course, stay on the course, and embody the vision, right? Lead by example. And so you tell your team, this is what we're doing. Once you've gotten the feedback and everybody has been brought into the situation, if you have a couple of naysayers, you just sort of have to move on from it. You got to be okay with certain people just not being 100% happy all the time.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Emotional Intelligence Podcast, a podcast where we explore the intersection of emotional intelligence and leadership. And whether you're a seasoned executive or just starting out in your leadership journey, we're going to share practical tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you develop your emotional intelligence and achieve your goals. So sit back, relax, and get ready to take your leadership skills to the next level. I'm Ismail.
And I'm Samir. So Ismail, one of the, I think, toughest challenges that leaders have to face every day, seemingly, is getting buy-in or gaining buy-in from their teams. Right. So every decision a leader makes or is forced to make isn't always a popular one with their teams. And it's the job of the leader to frame the narrative and to gain the buy-in from others, right, to reach the objectives that the company may have or a specific leader may have.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I certainly think it's one of those skills that leaders probably take for granted. But once you're really able to master that, I think it goes a long way in helping them just become a really strong, if not great, leader. And, you know, that ability to get someone to deliver, even when things are just really tough or boring.
Yeah, like the mundane everyday tasks.
Yeah, and look, I think we've all been there, right? I mean, let's just say half the project that we do become mundane, but they have to get done in the end, right? We know that. You're getting paid to do this. So how do you get it done?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, there's always like those top-down decisions or new company policies that they're going to hurt certain people on your team, right? And so it might be for the collective good, but there will be some individuals that will suffer. And so you got to get them to buy in. You got to get them to fall in line. You got to get them to understand why a specific policy or change is for the greater good. But that puts leaders in a really tough position to have some really, really difficult conversations. And so this becomes a very important skill, particularly in those like change management type of scenarios.
I think there's ways. So in the end, a project will get done. It's just whether you have the team's buy-in or not. And there's good ways of getting buy-in and there's difficult or more difficult ways of getting buy-in. But at the end of the day, if you're able to do it in the smooth fashion, it's really the differentiator between a successful and enjoyable project or something that just kind of becomes, you know, this, like you said, mundane or challenging project to push forward. It's like that heavy, heavy rock pushing uphill.
Absolutely. And I think at like larger companies, a lot of times they have the luxury of putting together this whole communication rollout plan where leaders need to be brought in before there's changes. So like they're told like, this is what you tell the team to mitigate the blowback. But at smaller companies, there is no playbook. There is no larger communication plan. Don't always have that luxury, but there's approaches. There's things that leaders can do to make change more easy to navigate and really mitigate these difficult situations. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. I mean, that's really what we're going to talk about is when you face a situation, when you need to deliver news or assign a project that you know your team or your subordinates will not receive well, how do you approach that conversation with emotional intelligence? So how about we get into that topic here today?
I think that sounds great.
So Ismail, let's jump right in. From your perspective, what are those core EQ skills that you utilize when navigating change or implementing change or talking to your teams about a new policy or a new project that may not be the most popular in their eyes.
I happen to work for a really large organization, and I mean, 300,000 employees over the around the world. So yes, we do have the luxury of communication teams putting together all of these well thought out messages. Now, I mean, that works for company wide decisions. I would say, you know, on a team level, person by person or project by project, one of the most important things that I value is clear communications. And I'm sure we're going to share some of these thoughts, but one of those is clear communication. And they just need to express their idea, a leader. So I'm looking to express my idea as clear and transparent as possible. And really, it's just helping the person or people listening to this message kind of formulate their own idea and thought and questions for that matter.
Yeah, it's really about sharing everything that you can share in that moment, right? There's always sort of that one or two pieces of information that may be confidential or something that we want to keep at the highest places in the organization. I work in an organization that's much smaller. When we roll out change, you know, there is not usually a formal communication plan. There's discussions between the leadership team on, you know, what we want to say and how we want to roll it out. But, you know, for me, a lot of times then when I have to cascade that message to my team, you're right. It is being as transparent as possible, sharing everything that you can. But then I think that walking them through the thought process is really important too, right? So this is where we started. Like, these were the business problems that we were trying to solve with this issue, with this particular change that we're trying to implement, or this particular policy. And then walking them through what the different challenges that we saw that we wanted to address through this change. And that helps them sort of, it helps with building that trust, I would say, that, like, you know, you guys actually thought about this, like you really put pen to paper, whiteboarded this out and really thought about how exactly this is going to impact us. And you're sharing that with me and what the steps you guys took. And that really helps in those moments.
It almost brings them along for that decision that's probably already been made. One of the things that I like to do when I'm walking them through the thought process, right, is actually, so there's two ways to look at it. I see, what is the benefit or purpose for the organization? And then I also like to try my best, and usually I can, find the benefit and purpose for the person or people. So I'll ask the question, so, okay, what do you think about, we'll go through the whole process of explaining it transparently. Say, so what do you think? What are your thoughts? And helping them understand, okay, if you do this, here's how it's going to benefit you. And I'm not talking about like money or status or, you know, promotion, although those types of performance things do matter, but it's, here's how it's going to help you make your life at work better, perhaps, or other people's lives better. Because I think there is value in finding the benefit for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when we talk about being transparent, we talk about stepping them through the thought process. Like, I had a mentor that I still keep in touch with, and he gave me some advice that actually really, really is something that stuck with me, and something that I think about all the time at work, whether it's just delegating one task or rolling out a larger process change or a policy change. And the term he used was, or the phrase he used is, explain the why. And so when you're getting that pushback, that initial blowback, whenever you're rolling out something new, is explaining why it's important is half the battle. Because I think once I started to do that and really explaining why it's important, and I jump right in, I don't even hesitate or wait for questions. Like, we are going to be doing this new process, and here's why. And you just see the body language of the folks on your team just change when you start talking about why. Because initially it's like, you'd say it and everybody is resistant to change, right? Change is scary. And so they perk up, and then you kind of just see them relaxing, and then they're sort of, it's interesting because you see them sort of start to process it, right? I call it the marination of yeah. You know, I'm a marinator. Like when somebody yeah. tells me something, they're not going to get a huge reaction out of me because I need to go back to my cave. I need to marinate on it. I need to like think about it. And then I'll come back like 10 minutes later and I'll be like, okay, I agree. Or this is why I disagree. But I'm not like a huge like reactor in the moment. So like explaining why is so helpful for people like me too. And so those are the same questions that I wonder and ask when I'm being told like, hey, can we process this new change or can we do something differently here? And so I want to extend that same courtesy to my team.
I think that makes sense. One of the things I love seeing is also when the team starts adding to the whys, things that yeah. maybe you haven't even thought about just are cursory. And that's really interesting. I think at that point when they're like, oh yeah, and another reason why is 1, 2, and 3. And you kind of at that point know things have hit well and mm-hmm. are settling nicely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think being open, right? Really, when you're implementing or communicating a new change, being open and receptive to listening to that pushback too.
Yes.
Like when they have a negative reaction and actually like caring about it, not just pretending to care, but like being open that like, hey, there may be something that I can still shift here. They're like not cementing the change until you hear that pushback. Is really nice too, because, or is really critical too, I would say. And, you know, people want to be part of the process. I think the research shows that when people feel like they have like actual agency in shaping a particular change, they actually have a much higher likelihood of embracing the change itself. So when you communicate the change, communicating in a way that you're open and that you're listening and that you genuinely care and that you're going to try to address the issues that everybody is bringing up is very, very powerful in those moments. And actually trying, like, it's not just, you're not doing lip service here. Like you're listening to them and you're saying, hey, look, like I am a human, right? You are the experts in this situation. I want to hear from you. You guys are the ones working in the trenches on this. What do you guys think we should do? And that's really powerful in those moments.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We hope you're enjoying the episode so far. If you want to stay updated on all the latest content and behind the scenes action, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and several other places by using the link in the show notes. And if it's not too much trouble, we'd love for you to leave a review and share this episode with some of your friends. Your support means everything to us, and we can't wait to connect with you online. Now, let's get back to the show. We started down this path, but it leads us to understanding, or how would you react when you have to, you know, it's going to be bad news and you know that there's going to be blowback. How would you specifically handle some of those situations? We touched on it a little bit, but I'm curious, what are some of the things that you might specifically do when you already know that that's going to be the reaction?
You know, one of our core EQ skills we talk about all the time is empathy, right? And we talk about how empathy is not sympathy. It's understanding a situation or a set of facts from another person's perspective, sure. right?
Yep.
So
agreed.
I kind of touched on it, right? Like you be open, you empathize, you actually care. And I found that like when they feel like their say matters, it really goes a long way, right? And so that's part of it, is empathizing with them and truly empathizing. I think another thing is creating an environment of safety. We've talked about safety a lot, psychological safety in other episodes, where people feel comfortable pushing back, right? So one of the things that I found over the years is when you, it's the way you pose the question too. Like, for example, if I come to the team and say, hey guys, we're going to be redoing the way that we monitor and analyze our financials. And I say, what does everyone think about that? Right. And when you ask it in that way, what you're basically telling them is, hey guys, challenge me. I just told you what we're doing, right? And so I've already baselined the conversation by saying, I already know what we're going to do. Now somebody step up and tell me I'm wrong, right? And so when you say like open-endedly, like, what does everyone think? That is, if you don't have an environment of high psychological safety in that group, your team is typically not going to say anything. So what I try to do is ask a question differently. Like I'll say, what about this do you think will work or won't work? And so you're kind of opening that door for, hey, there's possibility that something here does not work. Tell me what it is, right? Or I'll tell them all the time, like, you guys are the experts. You're the ones who are know this way better than I do. What challenges am I overlooking in this situation? What am I missing? And when you ask a question that way, it really opens a door because you're telling them, like, I'm open to your feedback right now. I want to hear from you. Saying, what does everyone think, is, I think, a little too open-ended.
That's true. I mean, in this, you are actually creating a super collaborative approach. You're making the collaborative environment so that the decision is almost by consensus. And I definitely like, I'm like, tell me two things that are going to work and two things that aren't going to work, because at the end of the day, it's not going to be 100% perfect. And at bare minimum, if you can identify things that are going to be risky or difficult or may not work, you can try and mitigate them early. And frankly, one would hope that you've already thought through. I mean, we're not perfect, so we're not going to identify every single risk. They are the experts, yes. And at that point, your job as a leader is to figure out how you're going to handle those, right? And I mean, so for instance, if you know that someone is, by them doing an activity, they're actually taking a risk, I think it should be your responsibility as a leader to be like, I will take that risk on. That's my responsibility. And their job is to just try and get the job done.
That's critical too. And you know, we talked about then as the leader, you know, explaining the why, telling them how you got to your decision, what you thought about, you know, sharing data, sharing examples, share as much as you can, but share it early too. Like I've found success in these kind of scenarios where I've shared my thoughts on a new process that may be coming down the pike, but like isn't there yet, to try to get ahead of the issues. Find that group of confidants or people that you feel close to, maybe your group of senior managers or directors, and let them know, like, hey guys, this is coming. Like, what are we doing about this? Like, what am I missing? What are my blind spots here? And a lot of times that mitigates a lot of the damage too, is just getting in front of those close confidants quickly, those peer groups that can help you navigate before you roll it out to the larger team. And that's been helpful for me in the past.
Yeah. I mean, so I think it's important to reiterate, we have touched on this briefly, but you know, emotional intelligence as a whole, it's not about being nice. Mm-hmm. I think it's about understanding and managing your emotions, the emotions of your team, and trying to put a positive spin on it, right? And that just helps with psychological safety, helps with motivation, buy-in.
Trust.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important. I'm very curious what your thoughts are on what happens when you can't get buy-in. What do we do when someone just being like, I don't agree, or they're hesitant, or you cannot get that consensus?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that took me a lot of practice was being okay with certain people not being 100% on board. And part of that is, you know, understanding that you gotta kind of take on that 80-20 rule and manage to the rules and not the exceptions, right? So sometimes, you know, you can do everything you can, but you're never going to make everybody 100% happy, regardless of the decision that you make, right? You can have something that in your mind is bulletproof that everybody is excited about, but there's always going to be those couple naysayers. And so you got to be able to look past that a little bit and have those conversations with people like, listen, like, you know, enough of the momentum and the peers and your peers that we've talked to are behind this, right? They're behind this change. We need you to get on board. And if you can't, this change is still moving forward. And I'll check in with you every couple of weeks to see how you're feeling about it. And if maybe your mind will change, but we have to proceed on this course. And then I think like a really important part for a leader is to then not waffle from the plan, right? And being able to set the course, stay on the course, and embody the vision, right? Lead by example. And so you tell your team, this is what we're doing. Once you've gotten the feedback and everybody has been brought into the situation, if you have a couple of naysayers, you just sort of have to move on from it. You know, you got to be okay with certain people just not being 100% happy all the time. And that's been a really difficult thing for me as a leader over the years to let go of, right? That desire to make everybody 100% happy. And some people disagree with that approach, but that's just the way I manage.
Yeah. And I think that, so I've been in the situation where people lead or leaders lead with the final call first, rather than, you know, having the dialogue. So, I mean, my thought process is this, is have the open dialogue, get the feedback, explain the rationale behind why it's happening, get people's input, right? It's really important that you solicit feedback, which we talked about, and then try and facilitate that discussion, like, you know, understanding it and evaluating the pros and cons of all of the things. And hopefully at that point, you're going to get this democratic decision to move forward. And I say democratic because really we're talking about majority at that point, right? And sometimes, let's just say you aren't able to get a democratic agreement, but you know it has to go through. I think you're the last resort is you as a leader making the final decision, but adding those caveats that you just discussed, saying that and you touched on saying majority of people going with it, right? But I'm talking about saying majority of people not, but you have to do it anyways, is that check-in. Let's try it this way and we'll come back and we'll evaluate to see, is it going the way that we expected? Did I miss something? Have you changed your mind? Have I changed my mind? And then going that way, taking the next step from there. That way you have yourself an out, you've given them an out, and you can actually make progress.
No, that's so true. Like making the change feel flexible is important too. Like whether, you know, you as a leader, especially at an executive level, you may have an intricate view into something, right? Like for example, I was at a company where they wanted to outsource a bunch of roles to India, right? And I was part of some really high level conversations with our parent company that made it very clear that, hey, these roles are going, whether you guys want it or not. But then the way I had to communicate that to the team was much different, right? I had to go down to the team level and say, we're going to try this out. You know, let's see if it works. Let's be open to it. It may be helpful. You know, now you guys can maybe get away from doing some of the more clerical administrative grunt work and sort of you paint that picture for them. And you know what, in the end, in that scenario, we were able to offload a lot of the more menial sort of tasks. And, you know, it didn't lead to a large scale elimination of roles on shore and everybody was happier. But just if I came out and said, hey guys, we're offshore and the powers that be have told me, so, you know, let's just deal with it. Have a good night. You know, that would have landed way differently. Oh, right.
People would have been immediately would have been looking for new jobs.
Right.
And they would have left. And really at the end of the day, there is a communication style or approach for when you have to talk about role elimination, and then also about like diversification, which is probably more what you were explaining, that opportunity, and not downplaying offshoring certain functions, but they can really help with efficiency. And that's the other side of it, and just helping them understand. It's funny. It's like I'm probably already playing through my head what you might have said with them, and I'm telling you that right now. But I've been through that. It's not a immediate reaction is to go to some place bad, right? Meaning like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my job.
Exactly. I think
this is a natural tendency, and you're trying to avoid that.
Yeah. It's a great example because you could really use all of the tips and tricks that we talked about in this episode in that one conversation, right? Being open to hearing their concerns. We talk about, you know, stepping them through the decision and why, like how the journey to get to this point, how we got there, explaining the why. And so all of that stuff, then empathizing in those moments with them, right? So Ismail, I think we did a good job today explaining some really practical ways that people can handle their next change management conversation.
Yeah. And I just want to end with one final point, which is I think pulling rank should really be your last resort used very sparingly. Because I think pulling rank really just puts it impacts, has a negative impact on the environment. And I think what we need more than ever these days is just a healthy work environment.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Emotional Intelligence Podcast. We hope you found it informative and enjoyable. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on your favorite platform. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more people. If you're interested in learning more about the topics we discussed today, be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. You can find them by visiting our website. And if you have any questions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us by email at info@emotionalintelligence.com or connect with us on social media by using the links in the show notes.